Okay, well, thanks everyone for coming to this session, and I will confess right off the bat that I'm somewhat surprised that you're here, because it was a session that had a very vague title and no description, which means that you're basically here on faith. So this session is about faith. No, I'm kidding. It's titled A Conversation with Stephen Downes, and I really want to keep it to that. I have things that are on my mind that I'm always happy to talk about and would like to talk about, but I want this to be as much a conversation as possible. I kind of come into this room, and for those of you who are listening on audio, and you can all see that I'm recording this on audio right now. The volume's a little low. I don't know why, but I can always boost that later. For those who are listening on audio, we're on the 35th floor here of some hotel in Vancouver. And so, of course, you can imagine the views that we have. And we're in this room. The audience is rather in rows. It's just like proper classroom with rows. There's a spot for me to talk at the front of the room. Of course, I'm not talking at the front of the room. Well, sort of. But, and we have the screen up. But the thing is, we have this window looking out, and there's mountains, and there's sea, and there's forest. We can see Stanley Park there, and some buildings with the blue windows that seems to characterize Vancouver. And we have the screen in front of the window. And I'm sort of sitting there thinking, this makes no sense at all. So, and I don't know, and that was my first reaction when I came into this room. It was like, it's just wrong. So, how many of you think I should move that screen? Oh, well, I do actually have words. Having conversations with, Brian and Darcy. We're doing a session a little bit later on, which will also be recorded. Part of that conversation was that the actual content of the conversation becomes less and less important, especially as time goes by, because, and my take on that is, it becomes less important because what constitutes truth, what is true today, more and more quickly is replaced by something new tomorrow. That's especially the case in a field like ours, where everything is so dynamic. You know, what's the best computer system that you can have, for example? That's answered one way today, it's answered a different way tomorrow. Why are you here? Seriously, I want to know, because there was no description. Where should education be going? And you have to talk nice and loud, so I can hear you. Recently, I hope.
I read through your article on editing the material in natural research. So, good material, lots of really good links in there.
That's interesting. Okay, that's fair enough. And I think you're right. Well, you're right. I do say interesting things and correct things. It's funny how hard it is to say that, you know, to stand up in front of a room and say, I say things that are true. I say things that are right. I'm actually pretty good at my job. It's a hard thing to do. Why? See, I do have a plan after all, but it's a very fuzzy plan. Okay. I've been away for a while.
How many of you do read my newsletter?
I've written about learning, especially online learning, but learning in general for a long time. And, you do that for a while, it's kind of like hitting yourself in the head with a hammer. And you sort of, at a certain point, you begin to wonder why you're doing it. And then at another certain point, a little while after, you realize, you get to the point where you're saying to yourself, no, there is no point, there is no point. And so I took a break. And I took a break, and there's a lot I could talk about that break, and I'm not going to talk about all that break, because it's not why you're here. That's why I asked why you're here, and nobody said that. So, and the question to me became something like, what is a meaningful life? And in some of the discussions that I've had with some people over these 2 months, I see that, as I've put up there, and I'm quoting somebody else, I love Microsoft's smart quotes, they're backwards. I love that software. And this is nothing new, right? I did some looking online, I saw some stuff in Dewey and so on. Education is simply society's expression of a meaningful life. So I'm thinking about that. So what are we up to then? Why are we here? Why are you here? Why am I here? Can you tell I have a background in philosophy? And that I haven't been doing my work for the last 2 months? I've just been sitting there thinking, does it show at all? Well, here's something. It comes from the Society for the Advancement of American Philosophy. It's a policy statement. A non-democratic society is one in which individuals' possibilities are imposed on them, whether by social, custom, economic necessity, in which the development of the individual's critical and reflective capacities is at best ignored and at worst suppressed. You might ask, well, why do I think that statement is important? And I realize, this is part of the thing that I was thinking about, is that this describes my education. Where what my possibilities were, and I'm speaking individually and personally here, what my possibilities were imposed on me. Where and by social custom, I grew up in a small town in rural Ontario. And you want to talk about social custom imposing possibilities on you, that's the sort of thing. Economic necessity. I started university 21, 22 every day. 23. It was a 5-year gap. I couldn't go to university for many years. I had no money. I was broke before, I was broke during, I was broke after. Economic necessity or political fiat, and that's what you guys are dealing with an awful lot today. Right? How many of you use blogs, wikis? How many of you use them in the classroom? How many of you are in schools where any of this stuff is blocked? That's what I mean by the same hands. The same people, the people who use them are, how can that be? Never mind, I don't want to
talk. But you don't have that control over
them. Sorry?
Someone else has control over
them. Someone else, yeah. Well, exactly. I mean, you're working, most of you are teachers, I'm assuming, or principals or things like that, and you're working in an environment where your possibilities as a teacher are controlled, by social custom to a certain degree, by economic necessity to a certain degree, but certainly by political fear. Why is this the case? I don't know where the next slide goes. It's an open question. But we're listening to Mark Kresge. I thought he did a really nice talk yesterday. And I thought he did a really nice ad hoc talk today. And know what it's like. It's a phone call in the morning. And can you come on, you know, in half an hour? That statement that he quoted today just jumped out at me. We decided to bypass the schools. It's so true. And then a little bit later in his talk, he's describing these video games, these online games, and, you know, you learn how to do this. Be a master of the universe. Control vast armies. Well, I'm not sitting there falling. I'm just falling. Well, and the funny thing is, that here's why I'm here. I grew up on those games. I literally grew up. Predate most of them. But all that time when I didn't have any money and wasn't really studying, I was playing games. And I grew up in arcades. How many of you grew up in arcades? That's probably why you're here. Did you play Pong when it came out? Right.
We got a chance to do that with Radio Shack.
Oh, yeah.
That was Radio Shack.
Sure.
It was basic there and it's all the Pong.
Yep, there you go. I remember Pong. Pong was okay, but I played it for a bit and then went back to my first love, which is pinball. Love pinball. And then, but of course, you know, for me, the internet really came to be important to me because I joined online games called MUDs. Any of you familiar with MUDs? I was eventually, MUD is, that stands for Multi-User Dungeon. And it's, you saw yesterday the video that Mark showed of the whole crowd of people storming the Capitol. That's the modern day incarnation of a MUD. Now it's got, you know, lots of videos and graphs. I realize this is so bad. I realize how much I missed that. I'm going to go back to that. I haven't been on one of those for a while. I need that. With the MUD, the original MUDs were all text-based. And you'd log on and storm castles and have groups and things like that, but you had to do all the images in your own mind. And so what I saw and what I felt in those environments was that empowerment. I got to build worlds. Well, I got to be a senior wizard. That was pretty cool. I was so proud to be a senior wizard. It's ironic, I'm more proud to be a senior wizard than to be a senior researcher, which is really sort of strange. So I'm thinking about all of this. Tell me if you, like, this is supposed to be a conversation, I'm just blabbing, so tell me if you don't like where this is going or if you think this is going in the wrong direction.
I just don't think that I think my universe right now is really weird.
Correct.
Just to me, I feel students and everybody here all are rather
excited. Aha. Yeah. I like that. That's the thing with games, isn't it? And that's why I eventually stopped when I was on the MUD Zone. Well, I stopped because the server crashed and it never came up again. But that's the weird thing. The world ended. How can a world end? Well, I guess it can happen. Yeah, but it wasn't real.
So when your world,
how did
you feel like, oh no, now I have to build a world,
or, you know, like, it was more like, oh no, now I have to build a world, another world.
Yeah.
And in fact, that's what I did. That's actually what got me into this, was Mud Dog was based at the University of Florida, here right in that corner there. And that went down, and at the time I was working for Athabasca University, And so that world ended, and I wanted a new world, so I wanted to build one, and the only server I had access to was Athabasca University's. So I tried to just build one without telling anyone. But there were certain constraints that they put on the system. It turns out you couldn't run an open-ended server on that system. So I told them, okay, well, I'm going to build this online virtual environment, and I'm going to do it for educational purposes. And they bought that. So they allowed me to build this MUD on their server. So that's how I coped with that. So I coped with the loss of my world by creating a career in online learning. That's kind of ironic, isn't it? I've thought about this. And this is the one thing where I think I sort of did, most of what Mark Prensky says I think is right, but the one thing I sort of disagree on is exactly the point that he raised. Games are really cool, but there is a sense in which they're not meaningful. The way I approach that is because come on and chair, table, water, candy, mountain. Sorry about that. Oh, no problem. You probably have to use the elevators. And I think everybody can empathize. Where was I? I was saying something really important and significant.
They were describing about meaningful.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, right, okay, yeah. Here's how I wanted to say it. All of school is artificial. Well, 90%. Most of the stuff that people do in school isn't meaningful. It's no more real than a game, is it? You think about the exercises that math class, math 30 or whatever, and trigonometry, actually doing the stuff in the back of the book. Do you think there's any real need in the economy for that person to be solving that trigonometry question at that point in time? It's not meaningful. It's like a game, really. I've always hated teachers. That's not true. I like teachers, but I remember when I was in grade 12. These are things you carry with you, right? That's one of the things that I've realized is how much of my schooling I've carried with me to this day, and how it's turned me into a twisted turtle. Grade 12, they required that I read Charles Dickens. And this would be the second Charles Dickens book that they required that I read. And I had already decided after the first Charles Dickens book that I wasn't going to read any more Charles Dickens books. And they had a wonderful plan for incentive, because they wanted to make me read Charles Dickens. Tests, if you guys have this in English class, any of you were an English teacher, but have them read a chapter and then a little test on the contents. What color was David Copperfield's coat when he went to see Mrs. Whatever, stuff like that. I thought, this has no relevance or meaning whatsoever for grade 12 students. So I boycotted the tests. So I failed English. So I didn't get into university until I was 23. I'm 46 now. Hey, that's twice as old. I did learn math.
You read Charles Dickens again?
Did you get into that? No. I never did read the book. I think I made the right call. You might think, how could I have possibly made the right call? I made the right call because I made the decision in grade 12 that this was more important to me than Charles Dickens. And that's been the foundation of the work that I've done since then. And it's funny, I learned a more important lesson in grade 12 than the color of David Copperfield's coat. I learned. I've had to remind myself periodically that, you know, my self-control over my little life is more important than anything you're teaching me in that class. And that's why I don't care about the content. And that's why I say things like, who cares about the standardized test? Because that's not what we're after when we're teaching people. We're after having them have a good life, not having them know the color of Charles Dickens' coat or how to calculate the cosine of an angle or whatever. Now, they need to do some of these things too, because if they don't learn how to do some of these things, they will die. So, but they'll figure that out. And so, that's why I like the games. But I want to see the games be meaningful. So how do you pull that off? And it seems to me the only way you pull that off is you make the work that they are doing in school meaningful. They do real things with real consequences of real value to society.
Question becomes, well, how do you do that in a traditional school model? You know, the one that was developed in the 15th and 16th century. That's the problem. Not the basic problem, that's the big picture. You know, we're still using the traditional school model.
Oops, I guess it doesn't highlight. That is why we decided to bypass the school. Sorry, that was going to be a nice, very emphatic visual demonstration, and then it wasn't on the slide, I thought it was on, and then it wouldn't highlight. So much for that. You're right. You pretty much can't.
The other thing, though, too, is that if you think about the life of the child, the early years, the primary years, school works for them. That whole social dynamic works for kids in the elementary level. Somehow, when they get into the secondary, when they get older, you lose them. You know, there's but I think that it's common. I think there's a lot of disillusion among
and first
get into high school and realize, you know, look, you know, knowledge isn't what it's about. It's more than that. It's just, you know, learning is more than just math. Whereas with kids, that's blended into this whole idea of being a child, being a school, and your friends, and all that stuff. High school, you lose that.
Okay, first of all, let me I just want to check. Do other people think that after elementary school, is it going to still work for them?
Yes.
School. I just want to check that.
I think it still worked well for me. They had other interests as well that engaged them beyond school. Had they been those other interests, they would have gone straight. The other girls is currently in Victoria, actually building cancer antibody, but she's sort of at an interim point in her life, so travel worldwide.
Right.
But she snowboarded, world competition snowboarding, and that sustained her with her peer group.
Sure.
My older girl is currently in Australia in graduate medical school. Did well in the public school system too, but and basically really started to flower once she left and got her undergrad degrees from Alberta and then moved on.
Right.
And now we're really open.
But I would suggest that those that children like yours in that kind of environment come from a supportive place from families.
Oh yes.
Engaging them in a variety of other activities, taking them on vacations, having friends in the house, having engaging conversations at the table, are going to be successful no matter what the school does.
Exactly.
To them.
Exactly.
So the comment was made before that well, you know, kids seem to get along well in elementary school and then it breaks down in high school. And I would disagree because I see 6 and 7 year old boys who just can't stand being chained into a desk. And I don't think that kind of structured educational system, and I realize there are some outstanding primary teachers who work around that and create an engaging, sort of colorful, active learning environment. But the ones who don't, the ones who are asking that student to sit at a desk when he'd much rather be throwing blocks at the wall or digging or something else like that, create an environment where I believe the most significant educational goal is do what I ask you to do. And I don't think, I think that that works directly against the concept you're talking about there, which is empowerment. When the chief lesson to learn is, and our kindergarten teachers often said, the first thing I need to teach them is to do, the first thing that we learn in kindergarten is to follow the rules. And I think there's a fairly significant percentage of society's rules that need to be followed.
Well, my kids went to for a few years they called Sundance in Victoria. It was very open. She decided what she wanted to do. Maybe wanted to do it, maybe not. And my daughter was she chose her kindergarten. My son chose teacher. And he goes out and played rugby. He played all day. And in the end, they all came up pretty successful. My daughter was great. My son was great. So yeah, they chose what they wanted to play. That's what it goes on.
School is a reflection of society. I don't know if all of the schools are doing this, doesn't work like that, but a lot of young kids, they have more empowerment or at home, they do what they want to do when they want to do it, because the parents are chasing the almighty buck or they're doing their own thing, and then here comes the teacher saying, well, the kids are just doing what they want, when they want. Where when we grew up, there was a lot more respect for our parents, or we went along with what our parents said. So when you go to school, it's a natural progression from home to school.
Yeah, I just that social issue sort of divorced discipline from education.
Yes.
Yeah. And you know, if you look at some of these other cultures, that hasn't happened. Some of these other cultures, you know, discipline and education are still fundamental. They're learning models. The West, I think, we've sort of divorced that.
We'll come back to that.
I'm in private education, used to be a teacher, and so we do a lot of e-learning, a lot of educational applications, etc. And we did a poll in our office because this question comes up quite a lot, because we have a lot of driving philosophical beliefs and what we felt and how we felt, etc. And it was, who were you good in school? You know, what was it? Because stories would pop up about schooling and we'd listen and, you know, and rebuild things. And one of the things, it seemed to be that either, on the whole, either you were good in elementary or you were good in high school. You weren't good in both. And that was about 50 people told.
Isn't that funny?
Yes.
See, me, it's a bit, I was alternately both good and bad in both. I'd have a couple of good years, and then a really bad year, and then I'd have a couple more good years. So, like grade 5, great year. Grade 7, you don't want to hear about my grade 7. Grade 8, fantastic. They even gave me trophies. 9, 10, okay. 11, yeah. Although, that's interesting. It's when you said people are coming out of elementary school okay, and then we lose them in high school, my first thought was, well, maybe that's because it takes 5 years to dash the independence out of people. It just takes that long before they realize, oh, yeah, I don't really have control of my life anymore. That's why I raised the question about discipline and different kinds of discipline. Right? There's self-discipline, which is very important. You have to get up in the morning. You really should, you know, and things like that. And then there's the discipline of doing what people say. There's the discipline where you believe that you are capable of doing things. And then there's the discipline where you don't have that responsibility and you have to surrender to some sort of external authority. And it seems to me, and this is where we come to the educational technology part of this talk, it seems to me that there is a lot of stuff out there that leads us to that other kind of discipline, that discipline of dependence rather than discipline capability. Brought a newspaper as a prop. Because I want you, the objective of my session is I want you to listen to talks like this one, like Prensky's keynotes, like the other talks or the articles. I want you to see them and listen to them differently. Here's my prop. I just, while preparing for this talk, I decided to walk down. Instead of preparing for this talk, I decided to walk down and take a picture of the bay, because I don't get to see the bay a whole lot, particularly in this light, and there was a little bit of a wind, so the ripples on the water frames nicely. And I needed to get a battery for this microphone anyway, so I figured, great, I don't have to prepare for my talk. That's how my mind works. I walk by the newspaper box, and I see this headline, and it jumps out at me. And for those of you who are on audio and cannot see this, the headline is, Gas Tax Relief Not Coming. Now, think about that. Think about what that says. Okay. The point has been made by other people that the use of the word relief is prejudicial, right? That it implies that taxes are something that are bad, that you have to be given relief from. But that's not even the point that I want to make here. The point is the way that's phrased, what that says, it implies that the money that you are paying out of your pocket for gas to put in your vehicle, that's not your fault. That's something that's being done to you. And if only they would give you relief from these horrible gas prices, it would all be okay. If only our government would properly take care of us. Now, as an aside, I'm a socialist. Think about that. Hard sort of thing for a socialist to say. But this idea that the government will take care of you comes from everywhere, not just one particular point of view. And, of course, it's not that the government isn't properly taking care of you, that you have to pay so much for gas. It's that you are deciding to pay so much for gas. You know how much I paid for gas in the last year? Well, nothing. Because I don't drive. And that's a choice. And you know, if you drive, don't drive. I have a Volkswagen, drive an SUV, I personally don't care. But the point here is that the language, the presentation, is taking the consequences of that choice from you and putting it to somewhere else. Right? And what it's doing, fundamentally and importantly, is it is disempowering you. And it's a very deliberate disempowering. That is the strategy. That is the tactic. We have to go along with whatever supports our oil industry because we're just helpless in the wind otherwise. And there is no relief coming for us. It's not like we could do anything about it if we tried. We're only individuals. We're subject to whatever these people decide. Government people. Doesn't that sound like your classmate? Yesterday's afternoon keynote, the Apple one, and lots of discussion about that one in the hallways. And sitting there listening to it and reading my email, and I see. Talks like this over and over again where if you had this product, you could do something. Or access this content, or we will produce this content for you. Right? And a lot of the stuff that I talk about when I talk about educational technology is how people can do things for themselves. They have slides here. These are things, and the reason why I didn't really linger on this slide is because these are things you've probably seen by now, certainly if you've been following my work. I've been hammering these things over and over and over again, right? Web blogs, you can create your own content, your own online content very easily. Flickr, so you can upload your images, your photographs, you can take your own photographs, real easy to take good, high-quality photographs. And I actually... One of the things that I've done recently, this is still a conversation, so anytime I actually pause for air, which isn't frequently, do jump in. So I didn't pick the title of the talk, but I'm determined to live with it. No, I'm just kidding. Okay, let's see if the internet's still working, and lo and behold, it is. And where did I put that? I'm just trying to remember where I put that. I got it right first time. Sometimes you live on the edge. This is the future of online learning. Well, not Stephen's Web, but this is where it's going. It won't be my stuff. I'm a really bad programmer. But program enough to get the point across. Here's stuff that's out there on the internet. I've just picked a few of the things that I've done. My glue is actually a thing that brings together content from different things that I've created. I've uploaded photos onto Flickr. I have blog posts in Blogger. I have bookmarks in Delicious, and so on. And there are other types of things out there. There's Wikipedia. I can access Wikipedia articles, or I can access a Google search, or whatever. And I have friends out there who they post content, and I can access that. And so here's all the content. And the point is, I can turn it into a link. Isn't that interesting? I told you I'm a bad programmer. The point is, I can take that content, start working with that content, start doing things with it. And so now I've taken this content off the web. I've got it in my editing thingy here. Oops. I really have to fix that. Oh well. There we go. And I'll give it a title. And then the next thing I'll do. Oops. Should we just remember that? Good. Auto memory on my password. And so I've authored, I've done stuff, and now if we go to this site, and there's my post. There on Blogger. Now, it's that easy to create content. It's that easy to get content from multiple distributed sources, to work with it, to edit it, and then to post it online. This is now on Blogger, which means that in about 2 or 3 minutes, the RSS feed from Blogger will be picked up by the various aggregators, and I don't think anybody actually reads this blog, but if anybody read this blog, they'd see this less than half an hour. Probably 5-10 minutes from now. Might already be up in the RSS. But, now, you might think of, so what? Well, imagine this. Imagine that you logged on to a system and instead of it just being the simple thing that I showed you, you're logging on to, well, what do we call it? The Government of Canada site. But it's your site. Into the Government of Canada site. And imagine that the contents, you remember I aggregated a bunch of different things to have material to work with. Well, the stuff that I'm aggregating is not this other stuff that I've written for the purposes of a demonstration, but economic indicators, price of oil, unemployment, inflation rate, and all of that. So I have all of this information coming in. I have ideas and opinions and viewpoints about budgetary spending and things like that. And the environment that I'm working isn't just a plain editor, but it's a system that looks a lot like a video game. But it's kind of like SimCity, those of you who've seen SimCity, where you do the city budget. And so you pop into this and all of this information is coming in and you go in and you work on the budget. And it could be the federal budget, could be the city budget, doesn't really matter. Maybe both, who knows. And so you get this information, you update it, you make your changes, perhaps you recommend a little more spending on a bridge or whatever. You write up an argument for it, you post it, it's syndicated, it goes to the Government of Canada. And it is your part of actually setting the budget. That's how the budget is done. Think about how we have a budget today, the federal budget, or even the city budget. We get somebody whose major qualification is being a salesperson, who managed to get himself elected. And then this person will pull an all-nighter. Okay, it's not quite like that, but you know what I mean, right? It's almost like winging it, right? And they'll pull a budget together and then they'll present it and match the budget. And we kind of hope that that works, but you know, we get deficits, we get surpluses, projections are off by hundreds of millions of dollars. High school student could do this, couldn't they? They could get all of this information coming in. They could be doing a budget. They could be presenting their budget reports and their recommendations and all of that, and they could actually be part of the total calculation that really, truly does determine the federal budget. Or others could do city planning. Again, if you've seen SimCity, you've seen city planning. The games, in other words, could be real. And I think that's the direction we're going. I know that's the direction we're going. That's the direction we're going because outside of school, that's the direction we're going. Outside of school, people are using these technologies that are banned in school to organize themselves. Miguel Gulen is on a tear over the last few days. He's a blogger based in Texas. In some Texas school districts, they're not simply banning MySpace. MySpace, for those of you who don't know, is a social networking site. People create web pages, send messages, things like that. They're banning any reference to MySpace. Any access to a website that uses the word MySpace. And the reason why is because people in those schools are using MySpace to organize protests about immigration law. See, this is the thing. This is what people don't see. This is the stuff that doesn't show up in the metrics and the monitoring. People are now using this technology to govern themselves.
Steve, you wrote a lot of material on the open source environment.
Yeah.
I know you have a real penchant for open source. So that sort of contradictory to a lot of the model used in the schools using, you know, IBM, Microsoft. There's a real battle on going on there which relates to what you just said about empowerment. So that's, you know, this is what I'm reading out of the material I'm writing to you.
And that's why, I mean, it's not simply that open source is free, right? It's totally the empowerment, right? When your school adopts Apple as a learning solution, to pick a company at random, you're surrendering the control over your software environment to some company that has no interest, really, in increasing your capacities and making it possible for you to do stuff on your own. And the thing is, and this is why there's two sides to the message, right? Because I'm also saying that to a certain degree, and it varies from person to person, this is the same thing that you're doing for your students, creating a climate of dependence. Schools should get out from under that dependence. They should stop buying software and have their students write it. They should stop buying content and have their students create it. And that creates independence for both the schools and for the students. And that's why I support open source. And that's why I support open content. And that's why I support things like Wikipedia, which is, for the most part, being written by your students. And if you think about it, your students, the people you can't actually manage to control in your classroom, have, in the space of less than 5 years, written an encyclopedia that is broader in scope, just as authoritative, and more widely used than Encyclopedia Britannica. Your students have done this. And you're telling them, turn off your cell phones, close your computers, sit down and listen. Well, maybe not. But you know what? Telling them to read Dickens. What do you think? Am I right?
I can just go back to that title that you had on gas prices. You know, it is true, yes, there's not a lot of things that we can do about gas prices, but I think the real power of the teacher is to have the students recognize that even with respect to that, they do have choices. I look at society, one of the ways we attack that is to discuss with students how important is it to drive, you know, a gas guzzling SUV as opposed to something that's I mean, I'm going to have a lot of people probably jump on me because they drive SUVs here, but the question is that there are personal choices a person can make that you do have empowerment regardless of how much, you know, gas prices are going to be, and that's the real power of the teacher. Can they drive that message home to the students? They have control in many respects, and it's to recognize that in itself. And, you know, that's really what I think teaching should be.
It's ironic that I was interrupting you to say that's the challenge, letting go of the control.
Well, yeah, teaching them how to teach themselves.
Homeschool isn't always the sort of thing a parent can do if they're, for example, a single parent.
No, it's not, but there are fabulous communities out there.
Yeah.
Choice, but there are fabulous communities with parents who are not to be associated with any group, but who, for whatever reason, for 6 months, a year, 3 years, don't understand their kids.
get told that their parents are pissed off and teach you the system. And that's just,
I don't think that's right. I've been doing school stuff for a long time. The wrong reason for your kids if you're mad at school or the teacher. And ultimately, it doesn't matter what happens in school, I argue. It's just in the same way as that you can write formally or you can write with text messaging. It's just an adaptation you make, adaptation. In school, I act this way, out of school, I act that way, and I can laugh. But it'd be better to say, kids don't go to school until they're 10. Let them have their fun, let them play, do all those cool things outside, and then maybe see what you can do in 5 or 6 years of learning the system. To me, it comes down to, you want to be a carnivore or an herbivore. And you have that choice. And it's neither is bad, but there's people that are herd people and they're vulnerable, so that's how life works.
My it's interesting you said, you know, as a parent you chose whether kids were at school or homeschooled or not. But we've given our kids the choice, what do you want? And we live in, they've chosen to stay in the school environment. They are in and you know, because we give them that option. What do you want to do? What do you want? But they choose to stay in a school and then they run into those control issues and what's my learning, what does the teacher say I learned, and how do I do this. And so then we have to powder them. You have to learn how to play the game, and that ties in with what you were saying. And I don't want to say that for the game, but it's the adaptive mindset that was referenced just before. And here's a game, here's a set of rules. You chose to be in this game. You know, there are several games going on. You know,
if
you came in, that's our philosophy.
A couple of thoughts that come to mind is that talking in an age of group, not all parents have the choice to homeschool a distance that they just can't. Right? They don't have the capacity. I mean, if you want to do it, and they don't have necessarily the economic capacity, the intellectual capacity, or the maturation or developmental capacity. All of us could do it, right? But not everybody out in the real world can do that. So it's not, and if you say, well, there's community, well, they can't access those communities. They don't even know how to find them. They don't even know that they're out there. No, but you're atypical, right? I mean, well, yes, I mean, let's say, I mean, you're an IQ of 130, let's pick a number, right? What percentile is that? That's like 95th, 97th percentile.
I learned about the homeschool community
from friends like this. Yeah, but I mean, I'm choosing, there's people that cannot do that. And just because you passed high school or not passed high school is not a measure of your intelligence either. What I'm saying is that there are other and broader measures of that where people just are not able on multiple levels. And that was the first thing that came to mind. The second thing with what you were saying as far as school and game. I teach high school math, which is a hard thing to justify sometimes.
And to adults.
So where I have to get to and try and get my students to understand is A, it is a game. B, it's not content, it's process, at least for me.
And
that's what I'm trying to get across is, you know what? You probably will never have to find the cosine of 45 degrees in the rest of your life. But the problem solving skills and all the other things that you're picking up through this medium, right, is what you're going to take with you. The logical problem solving, dealing with different situations, all those other things is what you're actually learning. Math just happens to be the traditional thing for the last 2,000 or 2,500 years that school and society in general has chosen as one thing to teach you. And that's why it's
conversation with a little bit past my comment a little ago, but when we look at where we are now and where we're going so rapidly, tools and the social networks, anything you need what you learn in school, there's so much more that you can get from yourself if you're well connected from the net. So you don't really need a school. So I think where schools are going is to be just a credential. People can take charge of their own education.
Now, I believe it's 12:15, right about now. Am I right?
Yeah.
Okay. That is the scheduled end time for this. We just heard applause over there, and I'm pretty sure that wasn't for us. But that's pretty good. So I'm going to have to stop. I know we can keep going, and I want to keep going, and I will keep going. Again, this, a lot of the themes that have come up in this discussion are themes that I've been thinking about, especially over the last couple of months and will in the future. I want you to look at these talks, look at that Apple talk, for example, from yesterday, and ask yourself, are they creating this sort of dependence or are they creating empowerment? And the other talks you hear at this conference, the talks, you know, after lunch, the closing keynote, okay, well maybe not that one. It's not really going to be a talk per se. And the metric that I'm using now, these things change because the content changes, right? To try to evaluate for myself whether these things are promoting empowerment or disempowering, or these four things. Do the tools promote autonomy and the capacity to make decisions for yourself? Do they promote interaction, capacity to communicate your ideas with other people and to hear the ideas of other people? Do they create openness? Can anyone play the game? Can anyone contribute? Can anyone read? Can you go in and change the rules? And do they foster diversity? Do you have to conform and study math? Sorry, that was a dig. An unfair one, since I have the last word. But I never said I was fair. Or do they, as John Stuart Mill says, allow people to pursue their own good in their own way? And I think using a metric like that, when you evaluate a tool, when you evaluate a sales pitch, when you evaluate a headline in the newspaper, when you evaluate what you're doing in your own class, keeping these sorts of things in mind, I think it gives you a very different perspective on educational technology. It really does. The tools are tools. And really what we're after is what we're trying to do with them and what sort of society we really are trying to replicate and create in our classroom. And that's my talk. Thank you.